Can everyone hear now?
Is that you talking?
You have to click that join audio.
I can hear you now. I can hear you now.
Yes.
Yeah, I can hear too.
How do I get rid of this chat thing?
Oh, you guys missed it. You should have heard what we were talking about. Whoa.
Yeah, so sorry that you guys missed that. That was
I can read lips.
Getting to our meetings we ever had. Afraid to do that.
Matt, I can read lips. It's not a problem.
Okay. Yes, let the meeting out. First, I would just like to read a statement of property owners' rights. We'll do this every meeting just to make sure that everybody understands. A property can be nominated by someone other than the owner, but the law requires that the owners must be notified of the nomination. The notification cover letter provides instructions on how private property owners can concur with or object to the proposed nomination. The law allows them the right to object to listing of the property and request a contested case hearing. Okay, today's agenda, does anybody have any comments or requests for alterations of this agenda? Can I hear a motion to approve the agenda?
I move.
Okay, second?
Paul.
All in favor? All in favor? Okay. Unanimously approved. The minutes for March 17th, is there any comments or suggested edits? Okay, I hear a motion to approve the minutes.
Motion to approve the minutes.
Thank you, Alton.
Thursday.
Seconded.
Second, okay, all in favor of approving the minutes? So, Bill, can you raise your hand? Thank you. Approve the minutes as they stand. The minutes for March 18th meeting. Any comments or edits? Okay, is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All in favor of approving the minutes? Okay, unanimously approved. Okay, nominations for today. The first one is, if I say this correctly, the Farias Building, presented by Don Hibbert. Turning over to you, Don.
Okay. I'll go to share screen. Can you see it now? Okay. Okay. I guess it's working. All right. However, Katie wants to pronounce the building. I'm not sure how to. Farias. It's in Kailua on Uluniu Street. It was built in 1955, and the architect was Herbert Baer, Honolulu architect in the post-war period. Today, we'll be nominated as significant on the local level under criterion C is a good example of a commercial building constructed in Kailua during the 50s in a modern style. Here's a rendering of the building. And it's fairly like it is in this rendering. The only thing that's different is these two bays up here have been filled in with coming out to the railing. This part is still intact, everything down. And this automobile entrance is a part of a commercial space, a restaurant. And I don't think it was ever not a commercial space because I could find no building permits showing that this was infilled. Here's the building today. Very much in the modern style. Characteristics that are important are these brick fins that are going up and over the building, the very popular in the 30s in the streamlined modern style and obviously being reused again. And also I found the vertical circulation, the stairs going up have these concrete blocks or bricks, we're not sure which, done in a pattern to allow ventilation. This is 1955. It's 3 or 4 years before breeze blocks really start to become popular at all. And so it's, again, an early indication of the desire to have such kind of screening, but with ventilation. Here you can see the fins, which make this building a very distinct design. Also, very much mid-modern, the use of canted windows. In the second floor also, you have your open lanai and then offices behind it. The storefronts are intact. All the canted windows, which are bays, are there. Doors are here also. The restaurant has different doors, but you still have transoms over it. Upstairs, the offices still have their same office fronts with the kick plate, the wood frame door, plate glass window, transoms above. And in the back, this is a house that's also on the property. It's a non-contributing feature. It has all new vinyl windows. It has T111 siding now. And so it's been worked over quite heavily, so it doesn't contribute to the historic character of the property. And also back here, you can see the kitchen addition, which was added in 1973. Again, this is a rear addition. I don't think it detracts from the historic character. Upstairs, there was a lanai that ran across the back. It's still there, although it's been enclosed in these sectors. However, remains open at the one office space. And so you can see what the original was at that point. So all in all, I think the building has a high degree of integrity. I think it's a really exceptional example of modern design applied to a rather modest commercial structure. Katie asked me yesterday other buildings that were designed by Herbert Baer. Oh, wait, first I'll talk about this. Canted windows. I think this is one of the last canted window buildings in Hawaii. This one is on Sheridan Street, which is now the back alley bar. There's also on the street going into Ala Moana from Pensacola, this Chinese restaurant also still has canted windows, although they replaced them with new, but they did keep the canting and the planter box in front. And then this building on Nu'uanu just before Vineyard also has canted windows. And here's an opportunity if anybody needs a place to rent. Now getting to Herbert Baer. He was raised in Philadelphia. He graduated from Temple University. He worked in Philadelphia for a number of years. During World War II, he was a colonel in the Marine Corps, working in the construction and maintenance division. And I suspect that's how he became acquainted with Hawaii. And following the war, he goes to work for Lures and Cook in their architecture department, their building department. In 1953, he opens his own office. In addition to this building, which he did in 1955, probably the best known building that he's done is the Diamond Head Ambassador Apartments, which are down at the end, Waikiki end of Waikiki, by Kapiolani Park. We have registered one building of his. This is up on Noella Drive. I'm sorry, I forgot the owner's name, but it's there. And that's the only Baer building that's registered at this time. Other buildings that he did the Princess Ke Aloha Apartments, which are in Makiki on Huelo Street. And he also did the rather modest Waimanalo Post Office, which I found to be a fairly interesting structure, especially with the open lobby. So that's all I have to present. If you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer it. Now, stop share. Okay.
Right for Don.
Bill has one.
Katie, I have a quick question for Don, if I could. I noticed that, I don't know if you call it the facing to the lanai or if you call it a spandrel, but I saw the two left-hand bays are higher than the two right-hand bays. Is that a later change?
They're higher?
Look at the drawing and then look at the, oh. elevation.
Okay, let me go back up. I never noticed that, Bill.
Sorry. It looks like there's stacked brick on the upper courses, like the so it could have happened early on. So
here.
Yeah.
What do you mean they're higher? Oh, the spandrel for the railing. I think what happened is the metal railing was removed and they just filled that in partway with that and then with windows.
But you can see there's painted stacked brick, much like
for No, there is. So I'm not sure when that was done. Yeah, the windows are aluminum. They're not vinyl.
Right. The stacked brick makes you think it might have been done really early.
That could be true, yes.
Any other questions for Don? Don, can you explain again which parts of the property you're including as contributing and non-contributing?
The building, which includes the kitchen addition on the back because it's part of the building now, that's all. The non-contributing is that residence behind the building.
Anybody like to make a motion?
I move that we accept the Farias building for the state register on the local level under criterion C and pass it on to the national register if the owner so chooses.
I'll second.
Second that first? Okay, any further discussion? Okay, all in favor of placing the Farias building on the state register and our criterion C, please raise your hand. Unanimous. Congratulations. Thank you, Don.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we can move right on to our next nomination, the Dr. Claude and Helena Buffet residence. I'll turn that over to you, Don.
Okay. Okay, the Claude and Helena Buffet residence is at 1828 McKinley Street in Manoa Valley. Dr. Buffet came to Hawaii in the late 1890s. When he first arrived here, he worked as a physician at the Pa'ahao Plantation on the island of Hawaii. He then decided to go back and get additional medical training. So he went back to the East Coast for that. And when he returned, he decided in 1912, he decided to stay on the island of Oahu. And he was the government physician out at Kahuku. Paul and I were talking about that a little bit yesterday. I imagine it would have been at the hospital, but I don't know. But he was a government employee because every time it said government physician as opposed to plantation. His first wife died. And then he married Helena Schmidt, who was a school teacher out at Waihole. And Dr. Buffet's jurisdiction included all that area. In 1929, he retired and he moved to Honolulu with his wife and built this house. It was built in 1929 and the newspapers never reported it. And I don't know who the architect was for it as a result. Registering it at the local level under criterion C is a good example of a bungalow style house built in Hawaii during the 1920s. Here you can see it's very much a typical bungalow style. You have a front facing gable with a projecting front porch, which is also got a front facing gable on it. You have a lava rock foundation. The shoulders on the steps are lava rock. The porch has, I think, always been enclosed. And then we'll move to the interior. Here you can see the interior of the porch. The lanai has been refloored, but the original, the original sliding windows are in place on this side. They replaced the windows on the other side, the front side, but they made them look the same as the sliding windows. Here you can see pocket doors, 15 pane pocket doors, which open up onto the living room. And here you can see the living room coming in from the front porch. The living room is spacious, has a Kleenex ceiling, which is paneled. Here you have pocket doors that open onto the dining room. Here you can see the Cephas B. Rogers light fixtures, which are on the ceiling. I've never seen these ones before. If I did, I didn't remember seeing them. They're rather interesting metal. The Rogers, before he went into making arts and crafts decorations, his brothers and he ran a major silverware company, made a lot of flatware for America as well as tinware. So they're a very well-known company back in New England. Here you can see the dining room, which has a large high wainscot, which also has a plate rail along the top. Again, the Kleenex ceiling has little crown molding around it. We had a little bit of discussion on the carport in the back. It's a garage now, actually. At this time in the nomination, I have it listed as non-contributing. Some members thought perhaps it could be. It was built with the house. It has a lava rock foundation down here, post and pier over here. This is all TNG wall. These two windows are now, it always was either servants' quarters. The owner says that actually the doctor's daughter lived here for a number of years, but it's a small studio. These two windows are not original, although the frames are all original. The garage itself is intact. It has its truss work. See the exposed ceiling. It does have a new door, which wasn't there originally. In the rear, where the studio is, they've put a deck off the back, but it's not visible from the road. And then there's a new door. There's an original window here, although this wall is T111, so it makes us think that probably they pushed this wall out and then just relocated the window. Then the interior is completely new. But it does have the door to the bathroom is a single panel door, and this is also a single panel door to a closet. But they don't have original knobs. So that's this nomination. If there's any questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Any questions from the board for Don?
Just a question on terminology, Don. Do you always call the masonry elements on the side of a stair a shoulder?
Yes. Do you have a different word?
Buttress.
A buttress? No, it's not a buttress. A buttress is sort of battered. Yeah. I don't think so. I haven't heard that, but I did see the word shoulder used on occasions.
Because since you used it, I've been looking it up, and buttress seems to work more. I can't find any shoulder one.
Oh, really? Okay, I'll look for that. But I've been using it for nominations for quite, because that stumped me for a long. Then I was very happy.
I always use like on a Craftsman house. I often call it a step buttress,
step buttress stairs.
But if it's okay. if it's not stepped, it would just be buttress stairs.
Right. That would be supporting a wall, and that's usually I guess it is supporting a load.
I've always heard it called a cheek wall.
Well, if you go to images, you'll quickly, if you would go to Google and then do buttress staircase, you'll see, go go to images and you'll see what I'm just, what you just showed.
Okay. All right. I will
just
do
curious.
That.
I'm just curious. I'm, mm-hmm. like I said, I couldn't find shoulder. I like shoulder. It sounds like a nice mm-hmm. idea.
But... okay. I'll see if I can find something for you on it.
Don't mean and to be
if
offended.
Not, I'll start
that.
Going
That's supposed to be my role, cheap. Right? Architectural
yes,
historian.
Have to do that.
And pedant.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll keep looking.
Any other questions for Don?
I think, Don, this is on page 8. There's one, at least on the version that I was looking at, it has a note there about more will be added when the
university that's an, it has been. Now, that's an older version. I have submitted a new version to HICRIS, which I thought it arrived in time for... the inclusion, the more information was assigned, essentially a little more detailed information on Dr. Buffet. Yeah, okay. Oh, sorry that happened. Yeah, because when I wrote the nomination, the public library was still closed, and so was the Bureau of Conveyance was almost impossible to get into. And so it wasn't until after they opened up again that I was able to go to the city directories and go to the deeds and things. That's why that note was there.
Thank you.
I have just a little comment. I have a little comment just on the doctor. It doesn't relate to the house, but I grew up two doors from the Kahuku Hospital, and there was a succession of doctors that would come through, and I believe he might have been one of those guys.
Well, it would have been before your time.
Yeah, before my time. Hard to believe, but yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, no, I think so.
Any other questions or comments for Don? Anybody like to make a motion?
I move that we nominate the Buffett residents, the local Criterion C to the Hawaii Register of Historic Places, and if the owner is willing to pass it on to the National Register.
Okay. Any further discussion? I would
I second that.
I would support having the carport and the cottage being a contributing element. Yeah. Other people. I felt like, I mean, it has been altered, but there still is a bit of integrity to portions of it, and considering that it was likely originally part of the property.
Yeah. The garage is definitely the same era and everything.
Yeah. And you can still see a lot of that within the cottage with the tongue and groove siding and the lava rock foundation.
I didn't see it, but the deck in the back to push over the top.
That's the issue, you know, and with the T111 and pushing out the interior of it, that studio being so different, and then the gorgeous lanai out there, definitely the garage is, you know, part and parcel of the same, but it does seem as if the rest is at best a hybrid mm-hmm. of the old and new. So I don't feel strongly about it, but I also don't think that leaving it as a non-contributing compromises the rest of it.
I kind of agree with Pat. I mean, the garage portion of it, I can really see the roots in it. But the addition, especially because it's the outer wall, it was modified in the windows, which is the real visible feature. I'm less worried about the interior than I am about that wall being changed in the window.
Yeah, you know, it's the original windows. They just moved them.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, that was part of the changes that went in with it.
Yeah.
So I've got kind of reservations about the studio part of it, but the garage part I don't.
Yeah. I felt that if the garage is intact and maybe half of the studio is intact, so that makes it three quarters.
Yeah.
Like Pat, I don't have a strong feeling about this. It's just a little reservation about it.
Yeah.
Inside the garage is pristine except for the door. I mean, that framing would never get through the building department anymore, but it works. Anyway, maybe can you just say the garage, or I don't know. But to me, it doesn't really matter, the whole thing.
It's a whole
building.
Right,
you
now
can't divide a structure.
Yeah, I wouldn't include the patio lanai area.
Oh, no.
I think studio I probably could live with, because, like I said, it's that one wall. And actually, it's from the street, it's a back wall.
It's that wonderful lanai that makes the whole thing look, that whole three-part structure, takes it outside of that bungalow kind of feel.
Yes, I vote we let it ride. It's the way it is.
Okay.
Just easier.
Hey, Don, I think it sounds like we have mixed feelings, but maybe just leave it the way you have it.
Okay, yeah. I have mixed feelings, too, so I was glad to hear yours.
Sometimes including it would maybe encourage them to save that garage, but...
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. That is true.
The house is obviously more important. All right. All in favor of placing this on to the state register and recommending for the national register? Okay, unanimous. Great. Right, thank you, Don.
Thank you.
Okay, next is the Martin and Mary Condon residence. Bill, you done?
Yes. Okay. The Mary J. and Martin J. and Mary Condon residence is at 3011 Vista Place, which is also in Manoa Valley. It was built a year before the other. This was built in 1928. And although I have no verifiable evidence, or at least nothing written saying so, I'm pretty sure Alvin Schattinger is the architect for the building. This was a subdivision that was made just on the lane. Schattinger owned this lot, so I imagine he was the architect for the different houses on the lot, on the subdivision. One of the houses was his daughter's house, which also is indicated that he was the architect for. So I feel fairly sure that he was probably the architect for this house as well. Schattinger, you may remember, we did a Tudor style house in Kahala like last year, and that was done by him for one of his daughters. I'm registering this house nominating this house under the local level of significance under criterion C as a good example of a bungalow style house built in Honolulu in the 1920s. This house, I think, is quite distinctive with its clipped gables, and it's very interesting. It has essentially the front-facing gable here, but the main entry faces the side of the property, and there's two more clipped gables here. This is the entry porch, and then this is the rear porch, which had the laundry in it. So they're right next to each other, and it makes for a rather distinctive design. Again, it's a typical bungalow style where you do have the ladder running gable. You have the gable coming off the front, and in this case, actually two coming off the front. Post and pier with horizontal slats for an apron. You have figure four brackets up in the eaves of the gables. And in this case, there's Doric columns on the supporting the front porch. You may recall I brought this house to the review board maybe 2 years ago. It was just when COVID struck. And at that time, they were putting an addition on the back of the house, and Paul went to look at it, and he wasn't sure exactly what the magnitude of the addition was going to be. I think, as you can see, I tried to get as far around, and it's, you can just catch a tidy glimpse of it from the coming up the road, but it's I think very well, you don't really notice it from the street. The carport is new. It replaced the old carport that had fallen down. Here you can see the Doric columns in the front, ventilator, the figure four brackets. The porch has been replaced with new wood. It was in very bad shape before. Still have the front doors, the original knobs and hardware, and it opens up into the house. The whole front, the living room runs the whole front or street front of the house, has all the original windows. They had the Kanex ceiling in when we first nominated, but when they started to do the rewiring and the Kanex just couldn't be preserved, so they've replaced the Kanex. But it still has original floorboards, original wainscot. And very much in the bungalow style, very open with the living room flowing across the whole front of the house. And then the dining room being an L off side of the kitchen also, just flowing in. Again, original windows, door to the kitchen, and the door on the left to the hallway. The kitchen's been remodeled, so has the rear porch area, although they kept the lattice opening, which was here. However, they didn't put a piece of glass over it so that it will not be too vulnerable to robbery. And this double hung has been replaced with a new double hung. They still have the original. We had a discussion on this too, Bill, yesterday. I was calling it scored tongue and groove. Katie was suggesting center groove, tongue and groove. No, center. What'd you call it, Katie?
That's right.
Okay, center groove, tongue and groove. So, but either way, it's there. It's original, as is the roof. The inside, it still has the original configurations, original single panel doors with original glass knobs for the bedrooms. Also, the closet doors have similar ones. The bathroom still has the original sink in it. Here you can see the new carport that replaced the old. They, again, modeled it after the old carport. And here you can see the addition that was added on. They kept the same kind of siding. However, they used new windows, so you can see right away that it's different. This was done by Fung and Associates, and they were very careful. They went with the idea of the educated eye. If you look closely, you'll find that the exposed rafter tails, they put a slightly different design on the new one as opposed to the old one. They also put a slightly different spacing. So there's ways you can tell right away that this is an addition. They have it on a lava rock, on a concrete, a CMU foundation with, they have lava rock veneer over the top of it, front of it. I think the house is important. I think it's one of the better examples of a bungalow with a clipped gable. I drove around Manoa and also Kaimuki looking for clipped gable houses, and I found a little over a dozen of them. And most of them aren't as in good shape as the one that was just restored or rehabilitated, I guess is a better word. Here's one up in Manoa. Another one in Manoa, which you can see the houses have gone through some changes. This one also in Manoa, which has all the windows replaced, although it still has the clip gable. And this one also, which has clipped gables on the eaves and on the portico. Here, this is also up on Manoa at the end of Oahu Avenue. It's a much larger one, a very nice one, actually. And this one is probably my favorite one in Kaimuki, a nice little modest one, which in good shape. But again, I think the exception to the rule. Here's another Kaimuki one. And still another one, which the porch has been partially enclosed. And then you get the ones with new windows, yards changed, elevated. Here's another one, which has new windows and the front yard all paved, and in addition, put off the back. And another one, which has been worked over quite heavily, all in Kaimuki. This one also. And one more. Oh, I guess I should mention this one. I did go see this house. The owners wanted to register at one point, but I thought it had been changed too much. Another Kaimuki one, which now has a picture window in the porch. And another small one. This is actually a 4x4 holding up the portico. And so, well, one more. Two more. Okay. So that's my presentation today for this one. If there's any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Comments for Don?
Katie? I guess I'm learning something of the value of being at the site visit. I'm sorry, I was actually giving a talk to the Colonial Dames yesterday during the site visit. I'm sorry I couldn't go. Don, is there a bead or is it a groove on the
It's a groove, it's not a bead.
Okay, because you know, one I often referred to it as matchboard, like a V groove matchboard. If you look that up, that seems to be a common way, or a beaded matchboard.
What's a matchboard?
Well, let me it just so happens I have a definition right here in front of me.
Okay. Curious.
A matchboard, by definition, is a board with a groove cut along one edge and a tongue along the other, so it'll fit snugly within the edges of similarly cut boards.
So it's essentially tongue and groove.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
It said matchboard can be used internally or externally, can be layered. So it could have square edge, feather edge, shiplap, or tongue and groove.
Oh, okay.
Popular in the Victorian area, used a lot into the 1930s when it was more or less replaced by plywood. I think maybe Home Depot calls those plywood sheets matchboard as well.
Oh, interesting.
They look like beaded matchboard. Mm-hmm. But usually you had two, either a V groove or a bead in the middle to break up the massing. That's what I would say. So okay. I call it V groove matchboard.
Yeah, call it V groove tongue and groove. No, that sounds crazy. Or I like the center groove actually better.
Well, that would be our own. That would be our own word.
Okay.
But if you want to use a word that is in more general use, you would say V-groove matchboard.
Okay.
But I'm all for making up our own words.
And when I do vertical TNG siding, well, I have to change that to.
No, I think you could get away with staying vertical tongue and groove. But that doesn't usually have any. Doesn't have a separation in the middle, right?
Exactly. No, just a regular.
But there are horizontal boards that have those kinds of breaks in the middle, right? So, I mean, the OG pattern is usually two boards put together.
Yes.
One. Uh-huh. I mean, one board that looks like two.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Up to you. I don't think it's critical.
Okay.
But I do wish we, you know, it's hard to get completely uniform usage. Everybody knows my battle on weatherboard versus clapboard.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, any other questions?
I had one question maybe for Bill. Wouldn't the columns be more like Tuscan columns than Doric?
The picture again? I'm thinking had a question. I had a question for Paul. Isn't that lanai too tall to not have a railing under code?
30 inches. I don't know if it's
looks
over
like it's
30 too, inches or not.
Looks like it's well off the ground.
Pile up.
And I got to admit, I don't like little innovations like having the teak woody look there, but
I mean, okay, here's the picture. I don't see. I'm sorry, I can't. Is there a way to blow it up? I don't know how.
To
zoom in.
You got to switch the slideshow, Don. Up above you on the in the orange banner, the slideshow. Keep going up higher in the orange. In the middle of the orange.
Oh, yeah. I got this.
In the middle of the orange.
Just, how does it,
you're almost there. You're almost there.
No. There's something up above. It's blocking me right now. You are screen sharing, and I can't see behind that.
There you see where you see design? Go down a little further.
Oh, I see design.
Then go three more to the right.
One. Two.
Okay.
Click that. Aha. Okay. Slideshow. Okay. Now I can.
From current slide, the second one.
Hmm?
Up above.
From
there,
current slide.
That one. Uh-huh.
Okay.
There
okay.
You go.
Okay. Yep. I guess. Yep. There is a ring. Yes.
Yeah.
If I will change it to Tuscan, if it's not,
I would call it a Tuscan column, like Paul suggests.
Okay.
But,
okay, that's not a problem.
I don't know why they had couldn't paint the facing instead of making it brown, but that's a small detail, I suppose. I hate those little like trendy modernist additions to things.
So what we can see in the nomination that it does say Tuscan column.
Oh, okay, good.
Page 5.
So I'm sorry I made a mistake today.
Already there.
Oh, you misspoke.
No, I think I misspoke earlier.
Okay. By the way, I think there's a little bungalow court right by Baskin and Robbins on King Street that has clip gables like this. It's really cute. And I've seen old pictures of several in Waikiki. They used to have a number in Waikiki with like bungalow courts with clip gable units. They are charming.
Yeah, I didn't explore down in that area.
Yeah, you don't have to, but it just if you're looking, driving around.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say that I really appreciate the two of you talking about spaces. And Don, you're showing us other examples of whether it's bungalow or another style, just to get a sense of what's around where. It's really helpful in a contextual way.
Any other questions or comments for Don? Would you like to make a motion? Paul?
I move that we nominate the Condon residents to the National Historic Register or the State Historic Register at the local level under Criterion C and recommend the National Register, if preferred.
Second.
Pat, second. Okay, any other discussion? All in favor of placing this on the State Historic Register and running it to the National Register? It's unanimous. Okay. Thank you, Don.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Queen's Quarters by Angie Westfall.
Hello.
Angie.
Yeah, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Queen's Quarters. Okay. And you can see my screen?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. excuse me. Queen's Quarters is at 1301 Lusitana Street. It was completed in 1969 as a 9-story mid-century contemporary style building designed by Joe Paul Ronstadt. And am I saying his name right? Does anybody know for sure? The G is silent?
Ronstadt.
Ronstadt? Okay.
Yeah, correct. You're saying
okay, it
correct.
I thought so. I wanted to make sure before I said it half a dozen more times it was wrong. The Queens Quarters apartment building, currently known as the Alapai Apartments, is in the Punchbowl neighborhood of Honolulu. The building's address is kind of up for debate. It's sometimes listed as 1308 Alapai, sometimes listed as 1301 or Alapai, or 1301 to 1305 Lusitana. So for this nomination, we use the Honolulu City and County tax parcel address. Just for clarity's sake. The building is on approximately 8,200 square foot parcel at the corner of Alapai and Lusitana streets. I'm sorry. The property on which the building sits was owned by the Liu family since 1911. At the time of construction, the property was held in 6 shares by the family. In 1979, with only 3 of the 6 owners living, the ownership of the property was converted to Alapai Apartments, and it was at this time, in 1979, that the name was changed from Queens Quarters to Alapai Apartments. The building's urban setting partially encloses it within a group of several multi-story buildings, including apartments, a parking structure, and an office building. And to the front of the building is the Board of Water Supply parking lot that you can see right here. We were fortunate to get a full set of permit drawings for the building. We've included a few sheets. Sorry. We have included a few sheets of the set in the nomination and provided the entire set to SHPD along with our initial submission for their archives. The building has an irregular footprint with overall dimensions of approximately 107 feet by 77 feet. And the Queens Quarters was part of the explosive growth occurring in Honolulu during the 1960s that was driven by tourism and the advent of jet air travel from the U.S. mainland. Did I skip one? The late 1960s saw intense construction activity in Honolulu, which included a great deal of apartment construction in the Punchbowl area. Residential neighborhoods from Waikiki to Chinatown to the Punchbowl and Lusitana streets previously held low-rise residences that were redeveloped for multi-story housing as land became too valuable to be utilized for only 1 or 2-story homes or apartments. The Punchbowl Makiki area became one of the most intensive construction sites and contributed significantly to the growth of the city. The Punchbowl neighborhood was seen by developers as prime location to provide housing for the increasing number of workers employed in downtown Honolulu. And this area at Lusitana and Alapai was a valuable housing location, not only for downtown workers, for employees, for employees of nearby Queens Medical Center. In October 1967, Queens Medical Center publicly announced its plans for a new multi-million dollar expansion program, and the construction of Queens Quarters building was planned to take advantage of the increased need for housing for workers in Honolulu and at the Queens Medical Center. The building's architect, Joe Paul Ronstadt and Associates, known primarily for the design of mid and high-rise residential buildings in Hawaii during this era. He is probably best known for the buildings shown here, such as the 1964 Queen Eva building. His firm designed over 40 buildings in Hawaii, most in Honolulu, and many of which are notable high-rise apartments. I don't know if you guys can see this long list along the side here, because I can't, but there's a list that goes pretty much down each of all the different apartment buildings designed by his firm. The Queens Quarters building at 301 Alapai is 9 stories, reinforced concrete frame building with a basement. The building has a horizontal emphasis that is accomplished by the banding effect of the open air walkway railings at the upper floors. And the horizontal banding is interrupted at the Lusitana Street on the southwest. side by a solidly masked concrete elevator and stair tower that's offset from the building. A portion of CMU wall along Satana Street has a section of decorative CMU breeze block grill, which you can see right here at the base. The building site is a sloping lot that descends several feet from the rear northeast side down to Lusitana Street. The wide CMU band at the second level that you can see in this photo defines a large open communal lanai area. Along the side elevation at Alapai Street, the exterior walkways at each floor have solid CMU railings as opposed to the front that had the metal railings, which creates a repetitive, strong horizontal rhythm. An exterior stairway is located at the southeast corner of the building, and a concrete vehicle ramp leads up to the parking area on the first floor, and another ramp on the Lusitana side leads down to the basement parking area. The rear of the building also has the open walkway railings, so you can see right here the difference between the two sides. In this photo, the penthouse, which is set back from the building perimeter, is visible at the top. The exterior walkway encircles the entire building at each floor, providing access to all the apartments. The building sidewalls are solid expanses of 2x8 pattern CMU with no fenestration. And this is another view where you can see the penthouse apartments. At the upper floors, the elevator tower is connected to the building's exterior walkway by a short bridge with aluminum railings. This is the typical elevator and stair exterior open-air lobby found at each floor. Apartment entries are typically flush wood doors, with some doors having panels of jalousie windows, as shown here. Windows are large jalousies, and they are original for the most part. The frames are, I'm sure the glass has been replaced over time due to breakage. Based on the two units accessible by Mason on the third and eighth floors, the interiors of the apartments typically have painted CMU and gypsum board walls, wood laminate flooring, and textured acoustic ceilings. Plumbing fixtures have all been replaced, and most rooms have added ceiling fans with lights. But the overall layout of the apartments has remained the same. This is a view of the garage and the open-air communal basement laundry area. Note the breeze block that is visible from the front of the building. The Queens Quarters building is of local significance under Criterion A for its association with the development of housing in Honolulu during the late 1960s, a time when the city was experiencing a shortage of housing and a resulting building boom. It's also significant under Criterion C as a good example of mid-century modern mid-rise building in Hawaii in a vernacular style employing strong horizontal and vertical elements. The open-air walkways at each level and the cantilevered lanai are local adaptations to the mid-century vocabulary. The period of significance is 1969, coinciding with the building's construction date. The building has undergone relatively few changes to the exterior and common spaces over the years. Individual apartments have been updated, but they retain their original floor plans. The building retains good integrity, and that is it. Thank you. I'll stop share.
Questions or comments for Angie?
One question.
Go ahead,
Paul. Go ahead. Are the units air conditioned or natural ventilation or both?
That is a good question. As far as I know, they're naturally ventilated. I don't see any photos anywhere of any kind of HVAC system in all of our site photos.
Paul, Angie, I did see a protruding air conditioning unit. I don't just not it wasn't uniform. There was one in one of your pictures.
Oh, a window air conditioning unit. Uh-huh. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there's
Which
a few of
suggest
those.
That put in. Give an answer to Paul. I suspect they were originally naturally ventilated, and then people have installed their own.
Yeah, but there's not an overall HVAC system for the building.
Well, yeah. Having an individual unit, I guess, would suggest otherwise, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I want to compliment you on an excellent job putting this together. It was very interesting, and buildings that I used to just kind of go by without even taking a glance at, I'm beginning to get more aware of some of their value. And so, as I've said before, these are the buildings that were replacing the buildings that I grew up as buildings we wanted to preserve.
Yes. They replaced the buildings that Don just showed us.
Exactly. The these were the enemy, but I've come around to it. You know, I did the Dacomomo stuff. I've come around to it. And it is interesting.
No, they are some of them, not all of them. And we do have to be careful which ones we nominate, I think, because there are so many. But they are good design in their own right. So we need to appreciate them as well. I agree.
Well, even the clumsy ones are sort of evidence of history and style and things that are quite interesting, actually.
That's true.
It gives you an idea of what they were aspiring to and what was influencing them.
Yeah, Angie, this isn't a question that we usually ask, but and we weren't able to do a site visit yesterday, but it looks from the pictures like the building is white, light gray, and medium gray, and that's very much contemporary fashion. And I was wondering if you knew what the original coloration was for that building, just from an aesthetic point of view.
No, and that's something that we did look at in the drawings and didn't see any kind of schedule for the paint. So I'm really not sure what the original color might have been. And there's no color photographs that we found. So yeah, unfortunately, I don't know. And I agree, this sort of gray and white is very modern and probably is not what it was originally. My guess would be maybe it was beige and white. I don't know.
Do some paint analysis.
Yeah.
I had screwdrivers in the building.
Thank you.
That's another way of saying paint analysis.
Yeah. Wish I had asked that question about the Farias building, because that's definitely not, not the 1950s
old paint
colors.
Job.
Yeah, it does actually make a difference on how we see the different buildings, and how as a very, very, very young girl, I would have seen it in 1959.
On the Farias building, there's one little trim that's aquamarine, and that's so 50s.
Yeah.
I wondered what the rest of it was.
Right.
When I was growing up in Kailua, the building was all gray, and I think it looks so much better now. They've done a really good job with this building in renovating it. I've eaten the Korean restaurant since I was a teenager in that building.
Yeah, no, I like it too, but it's just, you can tell it's new colors.
Yeah, definitely.
Once we get a historic preservation program up to a master's degree in architecture, it would be a good thesis project, right, to understand coloration on modernist buildings.
Like the automobiles now, every single automobile is gray, black, or silver, or white. And in the 50s, it was, candy apple, red, or it's so different now.
Boring,
yeah.
They've got colors coming back, I think, Paul.
Yeah, they're coming back. Starting to.
I understand the Mission Houses is going to repaint itself. And I know when Frank Welch was out here to do the paint analysis, he couldn't find any original paint to make a call on it. So.
Well, the siding isn't original anyway, so there probably wasn't original paint.
It might have been a little bits and pieces somewhere, but they couldn't find it.
Yeah.
He was going to spend 3 days. He spent, I think, 3 minutes.
Any other questions for Angie on this building? Hey, anybody like to make a motion?
I could. last chance, right?
Go ahead, Paul.
I move we nominate the Alapai Apartments, known as Queens Quarters, to the state register at the local level under criterion C and is that C and A, and refer to the National Register if desired.
Any further discussion?
I just had one. My stepson is part of that Liu family and was a beneficiary of the sale of it back in about 5 or so years ago, whatever. I'm not that I had any benefit, but point of interest, maybe.
Another discussion? All in favor of placing the Queens Quarters Alapai Apartments on the state register? It's unanimous. Congratulations, Angie. Thank you. Moving on to our final property for today, Walker Park, also presented by Angie. Go ahead, Angie.
That's right. It's very tricky to find, get the slideshow button to actually work. There we go. Okay, this is Walker Park. This is a HART-initiated nomination as mitigation for the rail project. Walker Park is a triangular landscaped park and plaza at the southern terminus of Fort Street Mall, first created in 1952 with the construction of Nimitz Highway. It was redesigned as a commemorative park in 1972. Walker Park, as I said, is located at the corner of downtown Honolulu across Nimitz Highway from Honolulu Harbor Piers 10 and 11. The park is bounded by Queen Street, Nimitz Highway, and the Topa Financial Center at the end of the Fort Street pedestrian walkway. There we go. The park will be adjacent to the new rail line that runs along Nimitz Highway and Alamoana Boulevard. The rail station will be located a block from the park at Pacific Guardian Center and the Dillingham Transportation Building. The oval at the corner here marks the location of the park, and then you can see the downtown station. Prior to the construction of Nimitz and Alamoana at the harbor end of downtown, the area of present-day Walker Park consisted of a grassy strip median with palm trees, as you can see circled here, and a paved triangular median that was home to the cannon that currently sits within the park. The view here is ever likely from the Hackfield Building. When these two areas were consolidated and enlarged by the Nimitz Highway Project in 1952, Fort Street was still a vehicular road at that point. And the park was mostly just a grassy median with mature palms that were saved during the construction, plus the addition of new trees, you can see the new palms down here, and newly planted banyan trees that are a little harder to find. At this time, the park was not named. The cannon, believed to be from the original fort, remained as the only other feature of the pocket park. And this is a 1953 elevated Mauka view up Fort Street. You can see the cannon in the corner there. For nearly two decades, the park remained unchanged. In 1969, Fort Street was converted into a pedestrian mall from Baratania Street to Queen Street. And like I said, the Fort Street at Queen Street to Nimitz remained a vehicular thoroughfare. But this is a nice overview from 1960. And In 1968, the old courthouse was demolished to make way for AMPAC Center Towers. And in 1970, the H. Hackfield Building was demolished for the second of the two towers. And you can see right here the gate in its original spot.
In 1971 and 72, the last block of Fort Street between Queen and Nimitz was converted into a plaza that served several roles. It created an impressive entry space for the new tower, formed a better pedestrian connection to the Traffic Island Park, and extended the path of the Fort Street Pedestrian Mall. It may have also been the first example in Honolulu of a nationwide trend of open spaces developed by private entities. A note about the resources, the count of and non-contributing resources. We use the National Register Bulletin A, how to complete the National Register nomination form. Their instructions are a little murky, but we interpreted and followed their guidelines as best we could, and we were consistent with the cultural landscape report that was prepared by HHF planners, so that contributing and non-contributing resources are consistent between this nomination and that report. Salvaged objects and building materials, including the old H. Hatfield Gate, a basalt sculpture created with H. Hatfield and Company building stones and coral blocks from the old courthouse basement, were added to the site, keeping the Adams president's promise of a historic display. This is the H. Hatfield and Company gate that I showed you was that once stood between the Hatfield building and the old courthouse. These are coral blocks salvaged from the basement of the old courthouse. These are the basalt blocks from the Hatfield building that's stacked to form an abstract sculpture. And here's a close-up of the cannon. And this is a 1930s replica of a traditional wood cannon carriage. And this is Walker Park dedication plaque. These are views, Diamond Head of the park. Views of the paved plaza looking Malka from Nimitz. And this is the fountain by San Francisco architect William Podesto and San Francisco landscape architecture firm Anthony M. Gazzardo and Associates. The sculpture is by Sean K.L. Brown, entitled Puna, and was added in 1991 in memory of Una Walker. Una Walker was the wife of Alexander Walker Sr., to whom the Overall Park is dedicated. A memorial plaque for their son, Henry Walker Jr., president of ANFAC at the time of the plaza's creation, and who oversaw its design and commemorative details, was added in 2000. Walker Park is significant at the state level under criteria A and C. Under A, it's significant for post-World War II community planning and transportation on the island of Oahu. It's the result of the booming growth of Honolulu after the war, the burgeoning car population, and highway beautification efforts at the time. The park is significant under C as a modern pedestrian plaza, possibly the first such corporate pocket plaza park in Hawaii. It also meets criteria consideration F for commemorative properties, such that it was designed after the life of an important person, in this case, Alexander Walker, as evidence of a later generation's assessment of the past. The park may also be eligible under criterion D for archaeological value from the period of the fort, but additional research would be needed to make this determination. And that's it. Thank you.
Questions or comments for Angie?
Angie, when was the date of the fountain, and was the sculpture added later, or is it all from 1991?
No, the sculpture was added later.
Okay. So there's no central feature before for the fountain? There was a fountain at the middle or something?
It was just a flat fountain, yeah. Those kind of flat fountains were pretty popular in the 70s. So.
70s are harder to love, but I'm getting there.
A little bit harder to love, it's true. But I find it really interesting that this may be the very first corporate plaza in Hawaii.
can't help but feel angry or annoyed that they tore down the courthouse and the Hackfeld building, you know. I mean, that was their urban renewal period where they lost so many good buildings, you know.
Yeah, those anyway. Just break your heart.
if anybody wants to see the Hackfeld building, you come to visit me at my office, and in the area outside, I have a model of it given to me by Bishop Museum. And I don't know if they had to do it as part of an exhibit or what they didn't have any story on it, but it's quite a detailed model, and I'm going to have to clean it up. Some of the leaves have fallen off the trees, and they have little early 70s cars driving around. And people doing hula in the garden area beside it.
I may take you up on that, Don. Bill, sorry.
It's all right.
Isn't that by Traphagen as well? One of the great old
architects. Yes, it was. And they tried to get, you know, they had a, I think the AMFAC said if anybody wanted to have the courthouse, they could take it away. Nobody, there were no takers, but. It was so. I think they had a vision, like with the barracks, that someone could take it and move it in pieces and then reassemble it.
Yeah.
Yes, I believe that's documented in the CLR too. That was the case.
That's where they tried to burn it down when King Kalakaua was elected.
They threw somebody out the window too, right?
Yeah, my guess. He had to climb out of the window, I think.
Any other questions or comments for Angie?
I'd like to just say she did a really good job on it. It's a sad little park when we see it this way, with the little pieces of sort of. There's some other pieces of Hackfeld building at the Bishop Museum, by the way, out on the grounds.
Would you like to make a motion?
I move that we place the Walker Park property on the State Historic Register under criteria A and C and recommend it to the National if so desired.
Second.
Okay, second by Pat. Further discussion? All in favor of placing Walker Park on the State Historic Register? Unanimous. Thank you.
What a morning.
We're getting too easy here. Uh-huh. Okay. And then also, I've been notified that the WOFAT nomination and the Holau market have been withdrawn.
I'm curious a little bit about WOFAT. It's in a National Register district, right? And
yes.
I happened to run into Dean Sakamoto last night, who has been an advisor to the project, and he said they already had their part one designation for the investment tax credit program. So why do they need to register it, and why are they registering it, I wonder?
This is Angie. I believe it's also part of the heart mitigation, both of those.
Do you have any information on why these two properties were withdrawn?
I believe Sam is not ready to present them
yet. I see. So it's not forever.
Yeah, they're just deferred.
It's not forever.
Not as far as we know.
They're just deferred, not withdrawn.
The other reason possibly to nominate the WOFAT is that the the Oahu tax credits that you can get, which is actually property tax credits, the property needs to have been nominated, I think, after 1978, and the original nomination for the Chinatown was done in 1973. That Chinatown nomination is going to be updated at some point. I think that's
well. That makes sense, Katie. You also have to be individually. Yeah. You also have to be individually listed. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right. So there are a number of other projects in Chinatown that have been individually nominated for that reason to be eligible for those.
Thank you. That helps explain.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if that's was the case for Wolf Pat, or if it was, maybe it was just for Cardiff Heart. Okay, I guess we've moved on to, all right, thank you, Angie. Congratulations. Moved on to our next item agenda, which is the staff report.
So I would like to start, in case those of you sort of officially, to welcome Dr. Mary Kodama, who is our newish architectural historian. This is certainly, she's been here for a while with Shifty, but this is her first meeting. And of course, you know, as you have already seen, doing a hybrid meeting is harder than doing either a Zoom meeting or a regular in-person meeting. Anyway. So Mary has her PhD in architecture from the University of Hawaii, and very happy to have her on board.
Thank you. You did a great job with all those just pushing. You knew, like, you knew exactly what you were doing. So good job.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that Mary did her DEARC project on Fort Street, so she's very well informed about these last projects.
Yeah, just, you know, the land board, the Board of Land and Natural Resources, had their first hybrid meeting last Friday in this very room, and it you know, reportedly the technology was just a nightmare. So this is run extraordinarily smoothly.
Thank you.
Nice.
Just as an update, we have we have a budget. With a very significant increase in funding for Shifty, the legislature approved an increase of 14 staff positions. And so if you know people who are interested, let them know. And as part of that increase in the number of staff positions, there's also a significant increase in wages. For almost all of the division's positions, I think it's really, you know, there are a couple of other, you know, matters that the, you know, some legislation that was approved, waiting action by the governor. Since we supported those bills all through the process, I can't imagine the governor vetoing them, but it's obviously his call, not ours. None of them. I think the most significant one is that there would be essentially a doubling of fines for damage or destruction of historic properties. And you know, just a few months ago, we assessed a fine of $155,000 against folks over on Big Island.
Do you remember the bill number for that?
The bill number for it's SB 1411. Also, a bill was passed that would direct us to place markers on places associated with President Obama's youth in Hawaii, with a very, very small appropriation to go with it. But, you know, we'll figure that out. It's been 5 years since this bill was first introduced. I don't quite know why it took so long to get passed. That is basically it. I'll turn it over to Kai Hiki. She can talk a little bit about the state plan, and I will have some remarks, just by way of introduction. It is having an approved statewide plan is a requirement of the National Park Service to have an approved State Historic Preservation Office. We are a couple of years behind updating the current plan, as you will see. It's a five-year plan, which I think it expired in, 2017, 2018.
2017 to 2022 is... And then our new plan will be 2022 to 2027.
I don't think we need to, and if people have questions, I can go into why it's taken us so long to get started on this. But I would like to point out that that the this is not a plan in what I think of as a conventional sense. This is not sort of over the next 5 years we're going to accomplish these specific things, and here are the benchmarks, and here are the performance measures. It is in the Park Service's words, they insisted it be aspirational. This is not a work plan for SHPDE. We wasted a year with me arguing about that with the Park Service, and they just absolutely would not approve it going forward. So that's just sort of a background there for you, and also that while we're still in the preparation stage, I guess I would say we have gathered a lot of information. We're starting to draft it. There's still a long way to go, and the board has a specific statutory responsibility to review it, not to approve it, but to review it and comment on it if it wishes before it's adopted. So, with that, I'll turn it over to Kaihiki.
Aloha kākou. Thank you for having me here today. I appreciate your time, all of you, and taking and hearing what I have to say. So we are working on this plan in-house, and we have had three meetings, community meetings, over the past last year. And we have a really good foundation, a good basic foundation for our new plan, and it's been imbued with the views of the community. So we're really trying hard to make it aspirational, make it be able to open this plan up and be able to use it to engage in a community response to historic preservation. So that's what we're trying to achieve here. I've taken the lead, and since it's in-house, we're just trying to do our best. I would like to have a Native voice in it, because that's my expertise, and so that's what we're trying to do. I'm trying to have some of that information about language and, you know, what you'd be able to do going forward in an aspirational plan. So anybody could just pick it up and say, oh, I found an EV here, or I found a shipwreck or something. And so pick it up, open it up, and we'll be able to give you information about how to engage. And so that's what I'm challenging the staff with, is please tell us how your role as an expert in archaeology, architecture, history and culture, please tell us how the community can best engage in this plan, using this plan. So that's basically kind of what we're trying to do. We want to make it informational, and we also want to make it so that they can use it. So that's our best hope, and when we're done, we will give it to all of you, and you'll be able to review it, give us comments, and we'll be very happy to take any advice and guidance that all of you have. So that's all I have to say. Thank you so much for having me here today. If there's any questions, I'll do my best, or Dr. Donner can answer those questions. Mahalo.
I have a question. I attended virtually the first one and saw a little bit of the others. And the first one, what was discussed, what the, you know, individuals who spoke, they tended to have specific issues often of a specific place. And then some people had general grievances. and I was wondering.
Thank you for being kind.
I thought that was rather blunt myself. But I did wonder if that's what y'all were expecting, if that's, you know, if there are pukas from the three public meetings that you expected from these general, you know, discussions, or.
There were expectations, absolutely. But what we gathered from that, our ethnographer, Tamara Luthi, who's Dr. Tamara Luthi, she's no longer with us, but she took all of the information and she assessed it, and then she synthesized it, and she's created this, what needs, you know, for the future, what the community's desires are.
for the future. And we kind of incorporate that into our goals for the future. That's my plan, is to take all that information and just matriculate it into our future goals. Because we have to have, you know, aspirationally, we have to have a 5-year of what we're going to do. So that's probably, well, with Dr. Downer's Manawan edits after. Then we will try our best to make sure that the community voice is reflected in this document. And we've kept all the appendices, and we have all the transcription, everything documented. So people can look at it, and it's very transparent. And I don't know if that, yeah, it's an awesome task. It's a challenging task. I'm looking forward to making it something great. I mean, I really, it's an awesome task, but I feel positive that we can do this. So with all of your COCUA, of course, and your expertise, we'll be very grateful for any comments.
It is really important after, before your time, well, into your time, the difficulties we had with, you know, Park Service and issues. It seems like there's more of a burden on each of these documents than might otherwise be.
Yeah, I mean, I think first of all, to answer your original question, I don't think we had any particular expectation about what these public meetings would be, you know, and we did do, or Tamara did do an online survey, you know, before we had the public meetings, but it was pretty open-ended, intentionally so. I have to tell you, I was thinking about this morning. You know, at some point in the next year, when we are fully staffed, we you know, up until that point, we have had really good reasons for not doing everything we could, because we were. I mean, I think I may have mentioned this last time when I prepared the initial budget for the first time. I decided I'm going to ask for what we really need, not what I dare to ask for, which has always been my strategy. Up until this year, and now, you know, I hope I haven't radically underestimated it, but I mean, it's a 40% increase in our budget, and it's a 30% increase in our staff, and you know, I frankly am stunned that we got it. I never in my wildest dreams thought we'd get all that. But I think in terms of moving forward, and you know, I mean, I, you know, honestly, you know, it would be a lie for me to say I think that the Park Service corrective action plans were terribly useful. You know, they were addressing some real problems, without a doubt. But there were a lot of things that, number one, the Park Service just wasn't their business. You know, this is not the Park Service's program. This is the state's program. And then there were a lot of other things that were just grievances that they had heard, and they thought, this is our opportunity to ding shift it. And if you know, for any of you who have, you know, if you are really bored, you can look at their second report. And their second report, in my view, is barely professional. It is so clearly directed at getting the previous administrator. I mean, it's the administrator does this, the administrator doesn't do this. It's over and over and over and over again. I mean, it just, when I read that before I came here, it just leaped off the page. That was the intention of, frankly, that entire exercise was to get the administrator. And I mean, I have to be careful. I wouldn't be here if that hadn't happened. And there were definitely, I mean, there's no question there were problems, and those problems preceded my predecessor. I mean, she inherited problems, and, you know, at the same time that, you know, the state was going through an economic downturn and, you know, the resources, you know, they just never had the resources to address those things. But, you know, one of the things that we're trying to do with, you know, I don't want to say this on the record, but I will, probably shouldn't. You know, one of the things, the Park Service insists that you say certain things in certain ways. And those may not necessarily be what we need, And our plan has to look a certain way, and we have to say certain things, otherwise they won't approve it, and we do have to have them their approval. And so balancing that with making it something that's actually useful to us and to the state is, I mean, it's a really thin line we're walking there. And regrettably, getting the Park Service's approval is more important than anything else. Because it, you know, I mean, I think there's no chance that the Park Service would withdraw funding, but it is, it is mandatory that we have this thing. And it's mandatory that they, you know, it's subject to their approval. I've talked a lot. I don't know if I really addressed your question, Pat.
Any other questions? Thank you. Thank you so much.
Alan, and if I could just make a quick question. Now that we have a smaller board and it looks like we have a full slate of people now, we do miss our Hawaiian board member. And I wonder how we might want to address that in the future and whether that is reflected in the plan.
Well, I mean, it's not reflected in the plan, Bill, but I think that's an excellent point. We are close to a full board membership, but of course we have three members leaving. We do have a new archaeologist coming on. Of course, Bill was reconfirmed. We will have some vacancies. You know, we have had a long-term vacancy with the Native Hawaiian, since Bill left the board. Not just for the Native Hawaiian, but for all the board members, if you know people who would be good and would be interested, I would encourage you to, get them to apply. It's too late to have them confirmed this session, but the governor can make appointments on an interim basis that they would serve, up until the next, at very least the end of the next term, legislative session, excuse me. But it is, it's an issue. Our efforts to recruit a Native Hawaiian have gone nowhere. And I think, without making too big a point of it, part of that is that many Native Hawaiians have seen what their burial councils are like, what those meetings are like, and they don't have anything to do with any boards. Our meetings are nothing like that, but still that sort of colors their view of things. But, if you know people you think would be good, I would encourage you to give them a nudge.
Alan, related to that question is, I've always been surprised that our board basically, people have actually made jokes that we are the Register of Historic Houses in Nuuanu and Manoa. I've always wondered why we don't ever, I know some of the reasons for it, but I would think to move forward properly, we'd want to start seeing more archaeological nominations come before us as they do in other states.
Well, we would certainly welcome, archaeological nominations, as things stand now, people nominate what they want to nominate. Unless they're archaeologists or, students of archaeology who have a property they want to see listed, we don't have the resources internally to have staff do that sort of thing.
I've always thought that, I don't know if there could be a movement for this, but it strikes me that people with an archaeological site on their property should get some tax benefit the way that house owners do.
In terms of that specific point, the only mechanism I can think of is if they were to, dedicate it for preservation purposes, and grant an easement to somebody. And I understand HHF does hold some easements. They would then be able to get, they could say, look, this piece of my property, whatever size it is not, can't be developed, so it reduces the value of my property, and I should get a tax a tax reduction, but you know, not quite the same as for building. Although certainly in Honolulu, you know, most of the time the land is worth way more than the house. You know, by several times as a rule.
It makes me think that's one reason we become somewhat less relevant than we might have been 30 years ago or 40 years ago. And I've been writing up a history of historic preservation in Hawaii recently for a book I'm working on. And it's very evident that a big part of Hawaiian preservation efforts have always, I mean, preservation efforts in Hawaii have been about Hawaiian resources and Hawaiian past. And the fact that we deal so little with it on this board in some ways alienates us from that process. And I think we should be really thinking about ways we could become more a part of that.
Yeah, it's actually true. We have not done a very good job of that. And, you know, in large part, it's because, you know, the one thing that we deal with on a daily basis that is sort of everybody's top priority is getting permits approved, getting them through our office. And we've got a backlog that backlog existed when I started, and we're still not staffed up to deal with that. Until we get that backlog under control, we don't have the resources to do the sorts of, you know, the sort of pro, we almost, honestly, we do practically nothing that's proactive. And that's just the reality, and it's the reality of our workload right now. And I think as we staff up, we'll be better equipped to deal with those kinds of, you know, sort of across the board doing outreach things that we just can't do right now.
I couldn't actually hear Andrea through that, but I know that the Historic Hawaii Foundation has done a really good job of trying to bring all aspects of conservation into what historic preservation is thought of as. And I think you guys have done a wonderful job of doing that, and it isn't yet reflected in the work of this board.
Right. What I'm saying is we fully understand that it's hard to work when you don't have arms to do the work. But what I'm thinking with this new budget and what you are working to, you know, fulfill this full staff, it will be great, and that we can leverage each other. It's really about collaboration when you're in that position to be able to do that. And because we always want to bring you in, but we understand it's like you have this backlog and you're trying your best with what you have. So it's like that's aspirational for the future. I mean, that's the aspiration, right, is to educate as many populations that people can engage more fully in a full collective vision of what this board can be. You know, it's beautiful and you're all doing beautiful work, but we all want fuller representations for all the sites. So.
I mean, even the earliest, thank you, Andrew. Even the earliest of the preservation organizations like the Daughters of Hawaii were intent to recognize both Native Hawaiian sites and like Queen Emma's Samaha Palace then, which arguably has a Native Hawaiian connection, but they also were fought to preserve the birth stones and Central Oahu and a lot of other things too. I just think it would give us more credibility. And I guess I think it really matters to revisit what comes before this board and what the law would say about giving benefits to people who are protecting Native Hawaiian sites. I've never seen a Native Hawaiian site with an easement come through our board, for instance.
Okay. Our next meeting item is that our meeting dates for the rest of this year are August 26th and November 18th. We have submissions. This is the list of nominations for our 26th meeting, and I believe we would like to hear a motion for a limited meeting.
I move that a limited meeting be held on Thursday, August 25th, the following properties: Irwin Memorial Park, Johnson Residence, Mother Waldron Playground, Chinatown Historic District update, and if they come on the WOFAT, and they won't.
Hello. No, I was giving you the name.
Oh, thank you.
Hello.
Holau Market. Thank you. An on-site inspection is necessary, and public attendance at these private residences is impractical due to liability, privacy, and safety concerns. And as an aside, I would like to say that these site visits, being with you all again, has been really rewarding. I the last 2 years have been difficult, not seeing the places in three dimension and not seeing and being with you all. And it has been an honor and a privilege to serve with you, and I thank you.
Would you like to second Pat's motion?
A second.
Discussion? In favor for the limited meeting? Unanimous? That looks like that is our agenda. Anybody have any other comments or questions? Say thank you to Paul and Matt and Pat for serving on the board. It's been great serving with you, and we will miss you a lot. And hopefully you'll reapply as soon as you're eligible.
Thank you all.
Yeah, thanks for your time. Yeah. Great.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Meeting adjourned.